The exclusive sponsor of the Grant and Danny radio program is Kondorian Murad, the law firm that's going to take good care of you and steer you and your family in the right direction by helping you to draft your will, set up a revocable trust, or create a healthcare power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them G&D sent you. To score a discount, just mention us, kmlawyers.com. Danny, I told you, family was away for a couple of days. They did a little trip to the in-laws. They're coming back. But because of that, I had an opportunity. I was hoping to see a movie or two.
Uh-huh.
I waddled over to the theater yesterday, and I saw Fly Me to the Moon, which is the romantic comedy about basically the moon landing and a project during the moon landing.
I think the premise is, in case they couldn't make the moon landing, they had to have a backup video?
Exactly.
Okay.
That's the general prognosis, I would say. I was a little dubious. So I hate conspiracy theories that, like, they just generally annoy me. Flat earthers, the fact that people think we didn't land on the moon, which was this unbelievable 400,000 people working their ass off for 10 years accomplishment. Like, that just generally annoys me a little bit, and I find it somewhat offensive that people just come up with their own facts on stuff. So I didn't know what to do with that movie. And I dug into it a little bit, and I'm like, is this perpetuating that nonsense? Is this feeding into that? And the bottom line was, the director was like, look, we make it pretty clear we landed on the moon. We're having a little fun at the expense of people who don't necessarily think we did, and we're doing a good romantic comedy. That's what we're doing. It's Scarlett Johansson, and I'm a huge, huge fan of Scarlett Johansson's work.
As an actress.
I think she's one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Channing Tatum, excellent actor. In fact, one of the great actors of our time.
Indeed. The whole Magic Mike catalog.
Yeah. I've always said,
personal favorites.
Very few actors as quality as Channing Tatum. But it's a good little flick. I enjoyed it. It's fun. I need people to kind of... I need them to not break this down as if it's everyone's trying to win Academy Awards.
Okay.
We're
just having fun.
It's a little summer movie.
Having a nice time.
But it's well done. I liked it. It's a comedy. I'm a rom-com guy. I got what I wanted out of it.
Okay.
Got to see ScarJo again. There's some good acting.
Sure.
Overall, we're going to give it out of 10 Buffalo Wings, we're going to give it 6.75 Buffalo Wings.
Okay. So that means if you got some free time, you've seen other stuff, that's probably a bigger priority. Go ahead and see it.
Yeah, I would see Deadpool Wolverine before this.
Mm-hmm.
I would see Twisters before this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a better film than those two films. If you're like quality of production and which one wins more awards, this is higher on that scale.
Sure.
Twisters is just a fun time.
Yep.
Deadpool Wolverine, we're just signing up for laughing at some very vulgar, gory,
raunchy jokes, a lot of blood. Smash that fourth wall with a hammer. Let's go.
First time, long time, though. There's some stuff I actually wanted to see in the theater. Like, you could go three different choices, bing, bang, boom, and knock them out over the course of a week or two. So it's been good to get back in the theater game.
I like it.
Also, I'm pretty sure AWOD's dad was in the theater with me yesterday. I'm 95%
sure. Okay, sorry. Okay.
So, Maury, if you saw Fly Me to the Moon yesterday, I was in the theater with you.
That was... I thought we were... I didn't have any.
So I was solo,
yeah,
and I wanted to wait, but it seemed like he was waiting for the credits or something.
Okay.
And I really had to go to the bathroom. So
yeah.
I did not wait to confirm if it was him or not, because I don't go to the bathroom during the movie.
No, you don't.
Can't have it.
You're great at that.
But it was very dark when he walked in. All I could make out was like white dad New Balances. And
that sounds like Maury.
What I believed to be Maury. And I texted.
Wow.
I texted Wad during the trailers. I'm like, is your dad a big movie guy? He's like, absolutely. And I was like, is there any chance he'd be at AMC Hoffman Theaters right now? And he's like, there's definitely a chance. And I was like, I'd say a 72% chance I just saw
him. I think he's in my theater.
So I thought about moving over and sitting next to him, but I thought that'd be weird for him.
Because especially if it's not him, then now you just...
Now what do I do?
You just slid over. I thought you were my friend Maury.
Here's my good Adam Peters story. I got two quick ones. First is, you did not watch the Netflix documentary about the now wife of Austin Eckler, who's a dancer, correct?
No, I've not.
You know what it is? I'll sum it all up.
Is it the Cowboys one?
No. His wife is a dancer, okay? She and her sister were famous, like, TikTok dancers together. Her sister, again, this is Eckler's now wife. Her sister, who was also a famous little dancer with her,
okay,
gets into a dancing cult, basically.
Okay.
She didn't know it when she signed up, but it's basically a cult through religion and dance, and they've like lost her as a family to this cult. And the whole documentary is about that, and you don't know that this person is engaged to Austin Eckler until like an hour into the documentary. You're like doing the Leo meme, like, oh my God, that's Austin Eckler. Wow. So anyway, I saw her. She's very pleasant on social media, very nice girl. She's like inspires people to be active and seems like a really good person. Mm-hmm. But anyway, she was out on the field with Austin Eckler, his now wife, and like Adam Peters was walking by, and she wanted like a selfie with her and Austin Eckler. And so she just stopped Adam Peters and asked him to take the picture. And I don't know why, but I thought that was hilarious. Just like the GM of the team, you know? Like, hey, will you take a quick selfie? And he's like, yeah, no problem. And he was super cool about it. But I'm like, the GM of the team's just taking a selfie.
That's pretty neat.
Of one of his players.
I
thought that was funny. The other thing is, a fan getting into his car today stopped me and told me that his kid had a football taken. It was like an autographed football. He left it somewhere. I don't think anyone nefariously did it, but like found a football and grabbed it or whatever. And so the kid was really sad. So he just mentioned it to a staffer who was wondering why the kid was crying. And he's like, oh, he lost his autographed football. He's bummed out, whatever. And they said, oh, well, follow me. And they like brought him over and they went inside and they brought out Terry and Adam Peters came down and like hung out with the kid for 10 minutes and signed a bunch of autographs.
Love that. So, I
love
it.
Little things like that, man.
I love it.
Little by little, they're winning people over.
You got to do it. You got to do it. I mean, again, it's your give the people the pickle thing, right? Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. Like, how, that didn't hurt anybody for anything, right? That was just time, energy, effort. Someone, instead of saying, not my problem, hey, what's going on here? Even that little interaction's worth it.
One at a time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And from sad because you lost your autographed football to memory of a lifetime, and you'll always love Terry McLaurin, and you'll root for Peters probably if you're that kid. Until you're a grown adult. Nick Allegretti is the new left guard of your Washington Commanders. Came over from the Kansas City Chiefs. Started the conversation with him juxtaposing this camp to what he's been used to in KC.
We're long enough into camp now, I guess, to get a good feel for the tempo and the pace with the new staff. You've obviously experienced a whole nother vibe in Kansas City. What do you make of this?
I like it. It's high pace while we're out there. He's not keeping us out here for, you know, hours and hours. We're out here. We're getting our work in. And he's reading the group. If he calls it early, knowing we have a real hard day the next day. So he's taking care of it, which is great. But I love the tempo. Everyone has a really good understanding of how to practice with speed and take care of each other, which I think is a huge challenge, especially you have so many new guys. A lot of young guys coming out of college don't really know how to play like an NFL player, but I think they're doing a great job. So I think that's been awesome for us.
One observation I've made is I feel like there's a lot more rotating along the line, too, rather than just having the same five guys, first, second, third team. What do you make of that, and how does that help you guys as you get closer?
Well, yeah, it's such a new group. It's been awesome to get to play next to a bunch of different guys, whether I'm, you know, at left guard next to Ty and Brandon or Lucas, or Trent's been out there at tackle, or at center getting to work next to a bunch of guys. It's good because you need to know the guys that you're playing with and trust the guys that you're playing with. And 18-week season, there isn't an offense, you know, knock on wood, but I don't know, last time all 32 offensive lines played 17 games. So that's not going to happen. Someone's going to have to step up at some point. So knowing and trusting the guys that, you know, we have in this room, the eight guys we're going to have dressed on game day, is super important. I think it gives us a really good chance to do that when we're playing and, you know, intermingling every day.
As far as learning the offense or learning the guys around you as you're referencing, how long does that typically take, or do you already feel like you've kind of mastered the playbook as you're out here right now?
In terms of the playbook, I'm real confident with it. There's some small nuanced things that, you know, in training camp, the playbook is huge. You know, and you continue to install and install and install, and then you get to the first game and it's a 5% or 20% of that, you know, so it's much smaller. So we're getting to the point now where we've got some plays in that we're only going to run against certain defenses. It's training camp. We can't tell the defense how to line up. So there's some challenges that come up there. But in terms of the playbook, I mean, it's football is football. The way we're going to pass protect is always different team to team. But a deuce block's a deuce block, an A block's an A block. That stuff doesn't change. So feel really good with where we're at with the playbook. And, you know, a little bit different the way we call it. It's more of a college word-based offense. But gotten real comfortable with that. I think the QBs love it, so it's been good.
Next week, you guys have the joint practice with the Jets. I'm curious for your perspective. There's a lot made of this in the media. Do you find those practices more helpful maybe than a preseason game? As much so? It seems from the outside like you're able to do situational work and kind of dictate terms. It might even be more beneficial than a preseason game, but what about for you?
Well, we have the same perspective because I've not had a joint practice yet. Kansas City does not do them, so I've never had a joint practice. So in a week, I'll let you know what it's like compared to
the
preseason.
They never did one while you were there?
Not one joint practice.
Is that a philosophy, you think?
That is a Coach Reed thing. He does not like joint practice. He's not done one in a very long time.
Wow.
That's his thing. Couldn't tell you the reasoning. But they get plenty of work in over there. There's no concern there.
Lastly, obligatory Jaden question. I'll apologize in advance because you probably get asked about him a lot. What's your perspective of a rookie and how he's performed and what he's shown so far?
Super professional. I'd say that's the first thing that really sticks out is he's happy to be here every day, always in a good mood, and he's here all day. Still, I said this in OTAs, he's here before me every day, and I mean, I'm getting in 2.5 hours before practice. We got nothing before. All we have is practice at 9. I'm here at 6:30. He's here. So he's here early, preparing mentally, physically. Not, I don't want to say quiet, but, you know, there's some rooks that come into this league and they're a little too loud, a little bit too big of fans of themselves, comfortable. Jane's not like that. He's able to talk and we, you know, shoot the shit, which is awesome. But, you know, he knows, you know, he's got a long way to go in this league and he understands that mentality. And I love seeing the way he attacks every day, you know, picking Marcus's brain and the coach's brain, Zach's brain, has really, I think he's done an incredible job his first couple months here.
Thank you for the time. I appreciate it.
Absolutely appreciate you, Grant.
Nick Allegretti, the new left guard with the Commanders who came over from the Kansas City Chiefs. So a couple things I want to zero in on there. First thing, did you notice he said it's a college word-based offense? The quarterbacks love that. That had my antenna go up a little bit. You know, we talk about making this transition as easy as possible. I really want to Saturday proof this offense. What I mean by that is run design stuff, run read option, indoctrinate Jaden Daniels by giving him as much of the LSU playbook as Cliff Kingsbury thinks will work at this level. But that's conceptual.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of even like what we're calling plays and how you're calling them in the huddle, a college word-based offense that's quarterback-friendly, I don't think that's a coincidence with a first-year rookie quarterback coming from the college ranks. Now, maybe that was what Cliff's offense was in Kyler Murray's third year in Arizona. I don't know. But it's clearly very different than what he's used to with Andy Reid for him to point that out.
Yeah, so I wonder, I think that's the significant data point there, is it's not what he's experienced before in other stops. But I also wonder how, you know, different that is for Kingsbury's history. Did he reinvent all of his language
or even
based
how
on
ubiquitous
this desire?
That's becoming in football.
And that's the other
one. I wonder how much, you know, it used to be we use these 11, you know, ways of saying plays, whereas now every position, and I don't know what word based, it might just mean, you know, Apple is a certain concept or, hey, we're running orange and everyone knows what to do on orange. Or it might mean that it actually just all the way out, you say X flank, you know, B, post, you know, whatever it is, mm-hmm. and you run through your X, your Y, your Z, what everybody's doing on any given play. I don't know exactly how they do it, but that just, to me, it meant maybe they're trying to make things a little easier for Jaden in his first year, which is music to my ears.
Indeed. And listen, whatever we can do, and this is the royal way, I have nothing to do with it, but whatever we can do to ensure Jaden Daniels' success, we should be doing. So if you know, Kingsbury came in before this and goes, I don't run that word-based system that is ubiquitous in college. I would say, well, maybe you should. So if he went through this big transformation like Kyle Shanahan and company did for Robert Griffin, for example, that was, you know, a lot of traditional Shanahan stuff, but stuff that they hadn't invented yet to try to ensure some success, I'm all for that. I'm with you on that.
Second thing I wanted to call attention to from that combo. Andy Reid doesn't do joint practices.
How about that?
I guess I've noticed the last couple years that the Chiefs didn't do a lot in that way. I didn't know that that was a hard and fast rule, basically, that they've never done joint practices and that, according to Allegretti, Andy Reid doesn't like them. He said he doesn't really know why. That is the trend. Everybody's doing them more and more and more. And most of the teams and the coaches and the executives behind the operations where they do these tell you that they're more helpful. You kind of heard my logic there, but I always say you get to dictate situational football. If I'm playing against Danny's team in a preseason game, there's no guarantee that there'll ever be a goal line play. So my offensive front or my defensive front may not get a chance to get in goal line or short yardage. There may never be a third and a foot. There may never be a fourth and a yard. Whereas in a practice, beforehand, I go, all right, we want to work in short yardage. We want to work in red zone. We want to work in goal line. We would like to do two-minute offense. There might not be a two-minute situation or a four-minute situation in a preseason game. So for all those reasons, I think you get more done maybe in these practices. But I'm a big believer in figuring out what the best teams that have the best operations do and trying to pattern it after them, pattern what you do after how they've won.
Until you become one of them.
I wonder why Andy Reid doesn't like joint practices, because he seems to be in the minority.
Yeah, it's, you know, everybody's got their own little picadillos and kind of, you know, things that you don't really believe in or kind of where, how you were raised. And
what's
he's
a picadillo?
Just some small little set aside, you know, like everybody's got a little something like Grant rubs his eyes.
Flavorful ground beef, spices, green olives, boiled eggs, and raisins cooked in a delicious tomato sauce and then served over a bed of rice.
I think that's what it is, yeah.
Cuban picadillo?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. So, but everyone's got things, you know, Reed's been so successful, he doesn't need to, but, you know, everybody else, the trend line is going in that direction for the reasons you just stated, right? Where you can get more work done, more important work, and you can control it. You can get some of those matchups that you want to see. I need to see a guy that's vying for the starting right tackle job go up against a speed rusher. Well, I got one of those. Let's have him do it seven times in a row or whatever, right? You can work those things out with the other coach. The preseason model has now gone to, guys don't really play in the preseason, we're not showing anything. I guess if you've got one of the best quarterbacks ever to live, that you don't really need to show anything and you're confident in your own stuff and you got some continuity there, I don't know.
Veteran team, continuity, it's been the same offense. Yes, there are some new players, but it's basically table dressing. Maybe there's less necessity for you to get a lot done this time of year. I even feel that way with them in the regular season to an extent. It seems like they're kind of in San Antonio Spurs dynasty mode.
Well, you remember how the Patriots always were. Now, they would do joint practices at the yin-yang, so it just shows you how much coincidence there is or corollary there is. But for New England, if you were going to beat them during these years where for 20 straight, they're basically going to the AFC title game and Super Bowl every year or every year and a half, September, they weren't as good. Remember, Kansas City was floundering last year at various points, lost their opener, they were just okay, the offense was scuffling, and wouldn't you know that group was good enough to win the Super Bowl
again? Yeah, everything they do is about being at their best in January.
Yeah.
And they can play that game because they know they'll be there with Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was saying was the Spurs dynasty mode was regular season was just kind of like a, all right, we got 14 more games and then we'll get, you know, then we'll get to the playoffs. They just kind of had to get there. And eventually they'd flip the switch, Duncan Robinson and the boys, and now you're not beating them. And the Chiefs have a little bit of that where if you go back and look at Travis Kelce's first half last year, it was fine.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, pacing he got his numbers,
mm-hmm.
but they don't really break more than a sweat than they have to, it feels like, in the early part of their schedule or in the regular season. So maybe that's reflective of that. I also think, and I have no idea what Andy Reid's logic on this is, I think there are coaches, even the ones that do this, that hate the fights in these things. They hate the, you can't have a joint practice without a melee, it seems like. You cannot have two teams get together in the heat on a practice field where there's no real rules. I mean, it's kind of, you know, do whatever you want. No one's suspending you. No one's fining you. Worst case scenario, you're getting sent to the sideline and screamed at or told to go back into the locker room. There's not a whole lot of punishment beyond that. I mean, how often are we seeing brawls and the benches clearing and guys swinging on each other? And I just think coaches don't love suffering that kind of tomfoolery either. So maybe Andy Reid
is just
out on that. He goes, we're not playing that game. I'm not getting somebody hurt, you know, punching a helmet, breaking a finger. I'll just practice against my own guy.
Yeah, probably every speech in every meeting room is about punching somebody in the mouth and getting up and not getting pushed around in our house and establishing physicality and doing our thing. And then, whoa, you guys did that? It's always funny to me.
I don't think you literally mean to punch someone in the mouth.
I know. Just it's crazy, though, that like we're talking about all this aggression and let's get it out and let's establish dominance, and next thing you know, it spills over. I can't believe that happened.
Yeah, I mean, that's the game, though.
It is,
the
totally.
The control of the aggression and being in control of yourself. And It's always been an admirable, amazing thing, even at the college level, when these guys threw the whistle or just gladiators, and then the whistle blows and they help someone up, or they'll pick up the cameraman they knocked over or whatever. Nick Allegretti's got a chance to be a free agent signee who ends up giving this fan base more than it expects. Which player that Washington brought in this offseason do you think makes a bigger difference than people anticipate in light of the Allegretti conversation we just had? We can open up the phones at 800-636-1067 on that next on Grant and Danny. Football tonight. I stopped short of saying real life football tonight because it's kind of football tonight. Texans, Bears, preseason NFL action kicking off from Canton, Ohio at the Hall of Fame game. Houston and Chicago both going to be sitting all of their starters, I would imagine. Very close to that, if not all of them. But here's the problem. Like, let's say you wanted to get Caleb Williams a series or something like that. Unless all your guys are up on offense, you can't. Nor does it really make any sense. You're not going to throw him out there behind backup. So it's not as simple as just getting a series for your first overall pick quarterback. And Washington's going to have this same dilemma to deal with soon with Jaden Daniels. If you want to play JD in the preseason, the way you're going to have to do that is all the other starters have to commit to the bit too. And so it gets increasingly difficult to get a whole lot of reps. My guess is Daniels will play in two of the three preseason games, probably not a ton, but tonight is going to be the Davis Mills show. We might get a bunch of Case Keenum. I'm going to assume Tim Boyle gets some work at quarterback for the Houston Texans, their fourth quarterback. And for the Bears, with no Williams, Tyson Bagent, how many plays in before we hear about his dad being an arm wrestling champion?
I just want to see his dad. By the way, I find his dad, I every once in a while, since I saw him do that, when he arm wrestled, who was the guy, the reporter, Tom Pelissero maybe, on TV, where he was so funny, I've gone down some YouTube rabbit holes to watch that guy talk smack and arm wrestle people.
But you're not still into that bit, right? Are you, you're happy for it tonight? You're ready for more?
No, the did you guys know, were you aware that his dad's an arm wrestler? Like, I'm already on that level, so I know. I just want to see the dad do shtick.
Okay.
A little bit less Tyson Bagent do anything at all. If that all makes sense. I don't know if that's a good distinction.
Yeah, I'd rather see Tyson Bagent play football. That's what I'm here for tonight. I'm good on his dad. I understand he's an arm wrestler and he has muscles. We've done that a few times now.
We have done it.
So I've been there, and we will move forward. Brett Rippon, you may be familiar with that last name.
I know that one. Yeah.
He's going to get some work tonight. And Austin Reed, the college free agent. Austin Reed from Bears quarterback, fourth quarterback, Austin Reed.
He went to college.
I'm going to give you four options.
An American college.
I'm going to give you four options.
All right.
Eastern Kentucky, Western Kentucky, Eastern Illinois, Northern Illinois.
Western Kentucky.
Austin Reed went to Western Kentucky.
He's a Hilltopper.
Western Kentucky. Vince is an Akakeek on G&D. What's up, Vince?
What's up, guys?
Hey, buddy.
How y'all doing?
Good, man.
So my under-the-radar guy that I feel like don't get talked about a lot, but I think he's going to make a big impact, is the center, Tyler Beattie.
That's my answer, too, buddy.
We all know how well Dallas offensive line, you know, has played, and it starts with the center. You know, no disrespect to the left tackles. We know how important they are, but, you know, if the center position is trash, so is the rest of the offensive line. We could speak to that very well from last year.
They just went through centers the last 2 years, Vince. I mean, they had. There's been two straight years. I don't know if last year was one of them, but two of the last three, I think they went through four.
Gates and Larson and Stromberg. And I mean, it felt like it was a new one every week.
Right, right. So I feel like as long as he stays healthy, fingers crossed, knock on wood, I think he's going to make a major difference. And I think that's going to do wonders for Jaden. To have that, you know, that veteran savvy, that a guy who's seen a lot of coverages, you know, a lot of different things. Hope Jay made calls. So we'll see.
Appreciate the call, buddy. Before we talk about Tyler Biadasz, Darius, fire up some game show music. Ryan, I want you to spell Biadasz. I'm looking for a spelling for Tyler Biadasz's last name.
This is a tough one because I was typing in the call screen, Doc, and
yeah.
B-I-A-D-A-S-C-H-Z?
Good attempt.
You're wrong.
Yeah, missed the dismount there.
Darius. Tyler Biadasz.
All right. I'm going to go with B-I-A-D-I-A-S-Z. Biadasz?
You got the part right that Ryan got wrong, but you botched another part. Biadasz is B-I-A-D-A-S-Z. Biadasz. So does he qualify as an under-the-radar addition? Here's why I asked that. They paid him $10 million a year. Who'd they pay more to in free agency than him?
It's a fair question.
He was literally the biggest splash they made. So if we're saying, who's the under-the-radar signing that's going to give more than is expected? Well, Dorrance Armstrong got good money, but he didn't get that much. I don't think anybody, top of my head here, got more money than Tyler Biadasz in free agency. And in fact, if you're looking at the Commanders' contracts at this point, how many guys on the team make more money than him this year? He would be top five, I'd imagine, in salary. It'd be McLaurin, Payne, Allen.
So looking at his cap number, it's relatively low, but I think that's probably a structural thing.
Yeah.
But just in terms of the money, he's just over $4 million. So there's Armstrong, Davis, Mariota, Wagner, et cetera.
$10 million per.
Yeah, his AAV is higher than that. So here's why I do say it's under the radar, and your point is a good one. Because you're right, they went and got him early and paid him market value and so on and so forth. I feel like I haven't heard it mentioned at all. Like, everybody's been focused on everything but the fact that they, in theory, at least have a solid, stable center. Not a guy that was injured for 80% of snaps the previous several years that had played guard that Ron Rivera and company decided was their new center, and Nick Gates. And it feels like that position is solved with some veteran savvy to help a young quarterback. That, to me, is such a huge part of it, right? And I think Vince just brought this up a moment ago. The idea that you've got a neophyte back there taking things off his plate with a guy that knows what the hell he's about, knows what should happen, and has seen some things before, I think can only help. So I think he's important, and I don't hear a lot of focus on that. So maybe that's how he's under the radar, but your point is right. I mean, in free agency, they went and got him lickety-split.
Yeah, if you look at annual average value, Luvu actually got more. To answer my question. So, and Dorrance Armstrong's at 11. So it's McLaurin, Payne, and Allen of holdovers. And then Armstrong at 11, Luvu at 10.3, and Biadasz at 10, all basically within $1 million, got roughly the same. But I would say, you know, if you're doing a graphic, ESPN's in camp for a day, or NFL Network today was there, and they have a graphic up that says key additions. It would say Dorrance Armstrong, Frankie Luvu, Tyler Biadasz, you know, Bobby Wagner, some variation of that. But I won't pick too many nits there. I certainly think he's got a chance to help a lot. Kind of a deeper cut if we're looking for one, a guy that's not being talked about. I do still think Austin Ekeler has a chance to help a lot. He looks spry in practice today. And I know that this is the time of the year where if you're a shifty running back and no one's getting tackled,
you should look pretty good.
Like, this should be a good day for you, but I just thought he moved really well. I was surprised with some wiggle, some burst that he still had. Another guy I would throw out there is Jeremy Chinn. He's super versatile. He's a Swiss Army knife. If this defensive coaching staff is who we think it is, I like that Dan Quinn and Joe Witt and this group is smart and uses guys in varied roles. Jeremy Chinn should be the kind of guy that they should be able to max out. Play him at strong safety, play him at some free safety, put him at linebacker, get him down in the box. Have him blitz occasionally, coming off the edge, wherever you want to put him. I just think Jeremy Chinn is the positionless guy in today's NFL that makes a lot of sense to, you know, try to just have basically the other team never know where he's going to be. Let's go to John in Ashburn on G&D. What's up, John?
Hey, what's going on, brother?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, so I could care less if we say he's underrated or not as far as the signing goes, but definitely throw my hat in for the center. Because if you look at last year, we ranked 32nd of 32 teams in pressure percentage from the center position. with Nick Gates. So regardless if you say he's underrated or under the radar or not, he's definitely probably going to have one of the biggest impacts of any offseason signing across the team.
Yeah, that's not overcomplicated, right? I mean, he's important. They needed a center badly. They got a center. That was arguably their biggest need going into the offseason.
Yeah, I was a huge fan of the signing. I know he's not a world beater, but he's certainly better than what they got. I'll throw one more name at you, a guy that's under the radar that nobody's talking about. What about Dante Fowler? This is not a star by any stretch of the imagination, but he does have 45 career sacks over, I think it's like, you know, 6 or 7 seasons playing in the NFL. I know he's bounced around a bunch, and he's never going to be the first-round superstar that everyone thought he was, but as a situational edge rusher, you could do a lot worse.
Well, and this is also probably a good landing spot as he could have asked for. Who is their – Armstrong's their unquestioned starter on one side. Who is their other pass rusher? And even – I'd throw Armstrong into this. I think he's going to be pretty good, but – who scares you off the edge? Like, who is your speed, situationally used rusher to get to the quarterback? I think Fowler is the most likely guy to be that because Cleveland Farrell's going to play on rundown.
Yeah. 11.5 sacks in 2019, then kind of moved into that part-time role.
That, by the way, in one season.
11.5.
That's a big year.
Yeah. And since then, he's been sort of, you know.
What team was that?
That was the Rams. Playing opposite Aaron Donald will help you.
Yeah. That's not going to. That's not going to make it worse.
No, sir. Then since then, he's been kind of that backup rotational piece, and in a fraction of the snaps, has had 3 worst year, but then 4.5, 6, 4. Again, these aren't world-beating totals. This isn't T.J. Watt incarnate, but it's someone that certainly helps to be able to sort of bring as part of a group. I think he might have a nice year.
I want to ask Danny if something makes me a nerd. As our resident fan.
Nerd?
How can I say this? I'm just trying to say it nicely.
Yeah, resident dork, please. Nerds are good at school.
Fan of things like elves and
dwarves, paladins, wizards, magic, wizards,
and magicians. Mm-hmm. And
not magicians, that's
Dungeons
ridiculous.
Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes, D&D. Yeah.
And all kinds of stuff that's really weird and
clerics.
Am I a nerd for this?
Dark
we'll
mage?
Ask Danny next on G&D. We'll get to Danny's ruling on whether or not I'm a nerd for something I did today. Coming up in just a moment. Welcome back, G&D on the Fan. Mike Trout's going to miss the remainder of the season for the LA Angels due to a tear in his left knee. He was working his way back from an injury, suffered this setback. Looks like a tear of the meniscus. He's done for the season. I looked this up. Mike Trout, who will go down as a first ballot Hall of Famer. In fact, at the end of the 2019 season, after he won his third MVP award, he was 27 years old. Think about this now.
Yeah.
27 years old. He had played, at that time, 8 Major League Baseball seasons. He'd won the MVP 3 times. He'd led the league in OPS 4 times, and OPS Plus 5 times. I mean, all kinds of what we call bold ink all over his baseball reference page as one of the greats to ever do it. Since then, 2020, the pandemic year, to now, that's 5 baseball seasons. He has played in 53, 36, 119, 82, and 29 games. So there has been, now 2020, again, the pandemic year was only 60 games, but there has been one of the last 5 seasons where Mike Trout has played in more than half of a year of baseball. 4 times. He has played less than half of the traditional season. And if you take out the pandemic year, not his fault necessarily, over the last 4 years, he has been derailed completely by injury 3 out of 4 years in the second half of the season. So we are, in my opinion, Danny, now on the verge of having to assume we'll never see Mike Trout like Mike Trout again. He's going to be 33 next year, which you could still have a lot of success. But it's been 5 years since he was at his Mike Trout leading all of baseball qualifying and statistics levels when he was winning the MVP award. I don't want to say he's on the list of if only we could have kept that guy healthy.
But if only we could have kept that guy healthy.
But now he's close because we were right on the doorstep of a conversation of is he the greatest baseball player of all time? And the way the last 5 years have trended, there's no real reason to have that discussion anymore.
So obviously his career's not done this minute, but you're now talking about somebody that when he does hang him up eventually, will have paltry totals compared to other Hall of Famers. Like, we're not getting to the 500 home run club unless something turns around dramatically in terms of his health and he's able to stay healthy. The number of hits, some of those milestone barometers, but the resumes, as you already said, right? The prime of his career, the bold ink all over the page, leading the league in runs, walks, on-base percentage, slugging percentage, OPS, OPS plus. The dominance of that 8-year run with another, you know, couple years later where he hit 40 bullets a couple seasons ago, just to remind you that if I'm healthy, I still got it. But he's going to end up like not in the top whatever of homers, hits, and all kind of the normal things we're used to seeing.
From 2012 to 2019, which coincides basically with the Nats' really good years, from when they made the playoffs the first time to when they won their World Series, he was a Rookie of the Year. He was top two in MVP voting every single year. But won when he finished fourth. But think about that.
Yep.
Either won the MVP award or got second, and there was a year where he got completely screwed, where they gave it to Miguel Cabrera.
Triple Crown.
Cabrera won the Triple Crown, which is just a dumb, antiquated, old guy. He led in these three categories, as if that's more important than being a better player in 10 categories.
Yeah, Cabrera had an unbelievable year. It was amazing. Trout should have won the MVP.
Absolutely. But I digress. Three MVP awards, should have been four. Top two every single year, but won when he was fourth. Over the span of 8 seasons. And now you're looking back 5 years ago to find the last full dominant Mike Trout year. And it's not like he hasn't performed. He hit .333 with 40 home runs at one point in this stretch in 119 games. But he's kind of been a shell of himself overall because he can't get on the field. And who's got it worse than an Angels fan as a baseball fan? Seriously. At this point? With Trout never getting on the field, and then they gave Anthony Rendon 7 years and $245 million to leave D.C., and I think he's played 6 times. And you how much he hates baseball when he's not playing. Like, that's not that fun to hear as a fan.
No, not even a little bit.
I mean, I'm paraphrasing.
I know, it's an exaggeration. But, yeah. But, I mean, actually, you know, because he's not playing, not performing very well, those comments looked a lot worse. But I know what his point was. He's like, my family comes first and everything else, and I also happen to play baseball. But just because the attitude, the way he delivers it, and the fact that he's played, as you said, 11 times and has hit .210 in 7 games since being in Los Angeles, that hasn't gone well. I mean, Trout was going to put up Bonzian totals in terms of home runs, steals, and all those sorts of things, and he was going to be kind of the, like it or not, the legit champion in some of these kinds of metrics for people that, he did it clean and we don't like Bonds or whatever. And we're robbed of that.
Grant and Danny with you on 106.7 The Fan. And of course, in Richmond on AM 910. So we're taking you up to 6:30. We're live and local deep into the evening. I got to get into whether or not I'm a nerd. And I want to set the table for Danny's vacation because he is like a high school senior.
Yep.
On June 11th. For the final half hour of this show, I would imagine, you're going to have 1 foot on the beach. It will not be long before you're on the sand. You are locked into The Fan. We'll get to Danny's ruling on whether or not I'm a nerd for something I did today. Coming up in just a moment. Welcome back, G&D on The Fan. Mike Trout's going to miss the remainder of the season for the LA Angels due to a tear in his left knee. He was working his way back from an injury, suffered this setback. Looks like a tear of the meniscus. He's done for the season. I looked this up. Mike Trout will go down as a first ballot Hall of Famer. In fact, at the end of the 2019 season, after he won his third MVP award, he was 27 years old. Think about this now.
Yeah.
27 years old. He had played, at that time, 8 Major League Baseball seasons. He'd won the MVP 3 times. He'd led the league in OPS 4 times, and OPS Plus 5 times. I mean, all kinds of what we call bold ink all over his baseball reference page as one of the greats to ever do it. Since then, 2020, the pandemic year, to now, that's 5 baseball seasons. He has played in 53, 36, 119, 82, and 29 games. So there has been, now 2020, again, the pandemic year was only 60 games, but there has been one of the last 5 seasons where Mike Trout has played in more than half of a year of baseball. 4 times, He has played less than half of the traditional season. And if you take out the pandemic year, not his fault necessarily, over the last 4 years, he has been derailed completely by injury 3 out of 4 years in the second half of the season. So we are, in my opinion, Danny,
yep,
now on the verge of having to assume we'll never see Mike Trout like Mike Trout again. He's going to be 33 next year, which you could still have a lot of success. But it's been 5 years since he was at his Mike Trout leading all of baseball qualifying and statistics levels when he was winning the MVP award. I don't want to say he's on the list of if only we could have kept that guy healthy.
But if only we could have kept that guy healthy.
But now he's close because we were right on the doorstep of a conversation of is he the greatest baseball player of all time? And the way the last 5 years have trended, there's no real reason to have that discussion anymore.
So obviously his career's not done this minute, but you're now talking about somebody that when he does hang him up eventually will have paltry totals compared to other Hall of Famers. Like, we're not getting to the 500 home run club unless something turns around dramatically in terms of his health and he's able to stay healthy. The number of hits, some of those milestone barometers, but the resume is, as you already said, right? The prime of his career, the bold ink all over the page, leading the league in runs, walks, on-base percentage, slugging percentage, OPS, OPS plus. The dominance of that 8-year run with another, you know, couple years later where he hit 40 bullets a couple seasons ago, just to remind you that if I'm healthy, I still got it. But he's going to end up like not in the top whatever of homers, hits, and all kind of the normal things we're used to seeing.
From 2012 to 2019, which coincides basically with the Nats' really good years, from when they made the playoffs the first time to when they won their World Series, he was a Rookie of the Year. He was top 2 in MVP voting every single year. But won when he finished 4th. But think about that.
Yep.
Either won the MVP award or got 2nd, and there was a year where he got completely screwed, where they gave it to Miguel Cabrera.
Triple Crown.
Cabrera won the Triple Crown, which is just a dumb, antiquated, old guy. He led in these three categories, as if that's more important than being a better player in 10 categories.
Yeah, Cabrera had an unbelievable year. It was amazing. Trout should have won the MVP.
Absolutely. But I digress. 3 MVP awards, should have been 4, top 2 every single year, but won when he was 4th. Over the span of 8 seasons. And now you're looking back 5 years ago to find the last full dominant Mike Trout year. And it's not like he hasn't performed. He hit .333 with 40 home runs at one point in this stretch in 119 games. But he's kind of been a shell of himself overall because he can't get on the field. And who's got it worse than an Angels fan as a baseball fan?
Seriously.
At this point? With Trout never getting on the field, and then they gave Anthony Rendon 7 years and $245 million to leave D.C., and I think he's played 6 times. And
has told you
how much he hates baseball when he's not playing. Like, that's not that fun to hear as a fan.
No, not even a little bit.
I mean, I'm paraphrasing.
I know, it's an exaggeration. But, yeah. But, I mean, actually, you know, because he's not playing, not performing very well, those comments looked a lot worse. But I know what his point was. He's like, my family comes first and everything else, and I also happen to play baseball. But just because the attitude, the way he delivers it, and the fact that he's played, as you said, 11 times and has hit .210 in 7 games since being in Los Angeles, that hasn't gone well. I mean, Trout was going to put up Bonzi in totals in terms of home runs, steals, and all those sorts of things. And he was going to be kind of the, like it or not, the legit champion in some of these kinds of metrics for people that, he did it clean and we don't like Bonds or whatever. And we're robbed of that.
Grant and Danny with you on 106.7 The Fan. And, of course, in Richmond on AM 910. So, we're taking you up to 6:30. We're live and local deep into the evening. I got to get into whether or not I'm a nerd. And I want to set the table for Danny's vacation. Because he is like a high school senior on June 11th. For the final half hour of this show, I would imagine, you're going to have 1 foot on the beach. It will not be long before you're on the sand. You are locked into The Fan.